Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda recording from downtown Nicosia, and surprise, surprise, this is a face-to-face recording, which are actually nice for a change instead of being online. With me, I have a very special guest and a very special human being, Ianthi Spasis. Welcome, Ianthi.
Hi, thank you, Magda. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for your kind words.
But you're a good human being. And because this is a edition that we are setting going into 2025, there's a reason why I invited Ianthi. Ianthi is someone who's always had a mind of her own. She knows where she's going. She's very aware of self-care. She's very aware of feminine and woman empowerment. And that's why one of the other reasons why you're here. To those of you that don't know, I met Ianthi when she first became public. So in 2011, when she was one of the two founding partners of Silver Pot.
Wow. That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, but I think it was the start of a journey. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've spoken enough. Now it's your chance to speak. Ianthi, speak for yourself. tell us about Silver Pot, that 2011, we're 2024. You're no longer in Silver Pot, but Silver Pot set a trend and Silver Pot is still going strong in terms of what it offers to the public.
Right. Okay, then. Well, it's funny because Silver Pot came about as, at the time, my business partner, Melly, the girl that we set up Silver Pot, we had just gone through divorce. Both of us got divorced. We didn't know what we were doing. Financially, we were in dire straits. But we had already gone through a bit of an empowerment journey, before with the frame drumming, which I'm going to come back to, I hope, at some point. And Melly and I were talking one day and we were thinking, you know, we're both capable women. We're both intelligent women. We both have so many skills and we've been using those skills to, make money for other people. Yes. Right. And we said, well, it's time to do something for us.
Mm. And there were also skills that in the market were not high on the scale of valuable.
Yes.
I think that's another thing that you also changed.
Yeah. So the idea of Silver Pot came about because we wanted a place that we would like to go to have lunch. So it was a concept that had not been done before, of a small place, a kind of like a modern day Maiko, but it wasn't a Maiko, but it was a kind of the same concept, but it was fusion. We introduced brunch. We had so many new things to offer because our menu was rotating. We didn't have a consultant. We didn't have a decorator. We didn't have a chef. We did everything ourselves, from designing the shop, from actually building the shop.
Tell me, I think one of the biggest successes of Silver Pot is your location. How did you choose the location? Because you're located in the business district. There are a whole lot of PwC, Giardafilidis, all around that area.
We had seen so many places and none of them felt right. For us, it was more the vibe of the place. It was that it was sunny, we didn't even think about the location. At the time, if you remember back in 2011, the Mr. Glidervi was actually pretty dead because it had gone through 2 years of
being closed
yes. for roadworks and whatever have you. So it was actually not a very busy street. We got the shop and then realized that we were
in a business district.
So it was quite a very pleasant sort of coincidence, if you like. But I think that the drive was that we really needed to succeed. We really needed to prove to ourselves and to others that we could do it, and we did.
And you also needed to survive financially.
Yeah,
I mean that's the biggest driving force. I've got kids
100%.
Support.
Yeah, when I said we needed to succeed, it was that. It was, you know, I mean, there was no alternative.
No alternative. And as we said before we started the interview, at the time, I also remember there was so many, no one thought you would succeed. There were so many naysayers, nah, it's too different, no. People are not going to enjoy
well,
it.
Well, first of all, it was, you know, the semester career is dead, nobody passes by. Okay. Then it was, but you can't have, you haven't done a feasibility study, you haven't done a, you don't have a consultant, you don't have a manager, you don't have a designer, an interior designer. How can you do, how
you don't
can
have
you
know? A marketing team?
You don't, yeah. How can you know what you're doing? Okay. And then it was, you can't have, a menu that's not set. How are people going to know what they're coming in for? Okay. And that proved to be our greatest strength because of PwC and of all the other sort of, the business centers around the business. People became regulars. So when you have regulars, okay, they don't want to have the same thing every day. So the fact that our menu changed.
So they come in for the quality.
Yes.
And they know they might get a new surprise.
They trusted that whatever we would feed them that day would be of good quality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I agree. I think that's why I go regularly still.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. It might not be the same menu, but, they do good food. And, they use good ingredients.
Yes, that was the main thing. And everybody was saying, but you use too – the ingredients you use are too good, they're too expensive, so you don't have enough profit margin, which is true, okay? But my response to that was always, I am eating there. I feed my daughter there. So I want the ingredients to be as good as they would be if I was buying ingredients to cook in my own home.
I think what you also picked up on is that living in Cyprus with all this souvlaki and Chef Dalia, and I'm not dissing them, the fact that you've got a lot of good alternatives, vegetarian, vegan, even us non-vegan vegetarians, like the option of having something healthy.
Yeah.
Of not necessarily being faced with a steak or a, I think that is also that I know that that's what draws me.
I think there's also something else, which is that I feel that Silver Pot has character. Most of the places that, things have changed now, but back then, I felt that everybody, because they were relying on consultants, marketing teams, interior designers, everything was kind of like fit into a kind of box. This is modern, this is fusion, this is that. Silver Pot wasn't like that.
Yes.
You couldn't really say what Silver Pot was. Well, you can't really sort of pinpoint it. You can't put a label on it. And it's because Silver Pot was us.
Mm.
So it was authentic, okay?
Yes.
And I think people actually liked that rather than the typical sort of,
Mayirio.
Your typical Magirio or your typical more modern, sort of more posh or stylized venue.
And I also think you introduced brunch. Yeah. I don't think brunch was so big before.
Well,
Silver Pop.
No, it was not big. We didn't introduce it. I remember Get Fresh used to have brunch, but that was more or less it. And then after us, yes. I think everybody does brunch now.
Yeah. And everyone wants to go for brunch.
Yeah.
But you're not only Silver Pot.
No.
You're also a frame drummer, which is very much part of who you are, mm-hmm. finding your center, finding your rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little about frame drumming.
Okay. Well, frame drumming came to me back in 2004.
Okay. The year of the referendum.
So it's 20 years ago.
Mm.
20 years ago. So in 2004, I had my daughter was 2.5 years old. I had stopped working.
You're in marketing. You were doing marketing before that.
I was. I did a lot of different things. My studies are in English language and literature and communications. So I was in advertising mostly. Okay. Translation work and publications and things like that. But I had stopped working when I had Yvonne. I wanted to be at home to raise her. But, you know, as...
Life doesn't give you what you want.
But, and also, as you know, I mean, it's you need adult company. You need to, you know, at some point you feel like, okay, this is too much.
Yeah. Enough of being a good mom. I need the balance.
Yeah. Three of us, three friends, we saw this poster thing about this event, this workshop called The Rhythmic Path to Transformation. Okay, it was held in Dohny. It was a three-day workshop beginning Friday afternoon, Saturday and Sunday, a residential thing, a retreat. So we thought, okay, we need a break from being mothers.
Yes, okay.
Okay. We had no idea what we were walking into. No idea. I mean, you could have told me that we were going for, I don't know, if we had been going to a spa or whatever, it wouldn't have made any difference. But I just needed to get away from home. It was the first time that I was away for such a long time from my daughter. Okay. So we walked into this room in Dohny village, and I saw this woman, Lane Redmond, as I found out later. And in this very ritualistic setting, okay, playing this drum that sounded so familiar. There was a familiarity, okay, that felt almost like a déjà vu, even though I had never seen this before in my entire life. Okay.
These things do happen that you think, I've been here before.
Right. And I found later that everything that I've done in my life, that if something comes to me and it rings true and it rings like it feels like home, even though I have never had it before, that's when I know that this is where I want to go.
But that's what should be all our guiding factors. When someone actually speaks to you with of insight.
Yes.
Insight.
If it's true, it will resonate within, right?
That's the way I feel about storytelling. When I discovered storytelling, I thought, this is where I want to be.
Uh-huh.
This is what I want to be doing, whether hearing stories or telling stories.
So well, this is frame drumming is kind of like that. You tell a story as well, right? But it's a story that is so completely different because my husband was at the time, my ex-husband was a drummer, a master drummer, but, you know, drums were for men. In my mind.
Another thing that you thought, that social context of, women don't go into business and drums are for men.
Yeah, well, drums were for men. I mean, how many women drummers do you know of? You know, I mean, drumming is like a male-dominated field. Mm. And not only that, but it was a completely different type of drumming because we're talking about the ancient frame drum, the archaeo timpano in Greek, okay, which was only used and only played by women, which... is a story that we have lost.
Yes.
Okay. So this is definitely is about storytelling and how we have lost the stories that make up our identity as females.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what I love about storytelling is that in most cases the storyteller is a woman, and in most cases the stories are those that have not been heard because they've been hidden, or not told, or pushed to the side as unimportant.
So, do you know, for example, that the women frame drummers of Cyprus in the temples of Aphrodite were renowned throughout the ancient world?
Why would I know that? Because it's not said in history books.
That even in Helen of Euripides' tragedy Helen, there's a reference to the Cypriot
frame drum.
Yeah. Okay. That the drum was predominantly, if not exclusively, an instrument that was played by women.
Why?
That it was associated with the goddess. That all of the goddesses of the antiquity before the dominance of the patriarchal religions. So we're talking about Inanna of the Sumerian civilization, the goddess Ishtar in Babylon, Isis and Hathor in Egypt. Demeter, Persephone in Greece, Ariadne on Crete, Cybele on the coast of Turkey, and then in Rome. All of these goddesses, and Aphrodite, of course, are portrayed with their drum, holding their drum. Because the drum, I mean, all of the cosmogonies of the old tradition of ancient religions talk about how in the beginning, okay, was the sound. Even Christianity says in the beginning was the word. Well, it's the first sound.
Yes.
So there was an understanding that we live in a vibrational universe, that everything begins as a vibration. Everything begins as a sound wave.
Mm.
So the goddess, with her drum, portrays, it's a symbol of the power of the goddess to create the world with one stroke on her drum, to create that big bang, the first sound.
Okay, that would reverberate and carry on.
Yes, and that creates the universe. And but that's also an echo of our heartbeat, and also of the sound that we hear in our mother's womb. We're all carried for 9 months. Listening to her heartbeat and the sound of her pulse as it pulses through her veins. So we are rhythmic beings, and rhythm is mostly associated with women because it's something that we first hear in the mother's womb. And it is also because they were more in tune with rhythm because of the menstrual cycles, because of their ability to synchronize with the rhythms of the moon, and they were the custodians of rhythm.
And we all know now that we have lost our rhythm. And that's 100%. Why the world is going chaotic.
Yes, we have lost our rhythm. We have lost our connection to the rhythms of nature.
Mm.
And returning, Lane Redmond, who my teacher, my friend and teacher, who wrote the book When the Drummers Were Women, A Spiritual History of Rhythm, and she's the woman who collected all of this historical evidence about why the frame drum was in the hands of women, and then what came after. Mm. And why it was silenced.
Yes. We know why it was silenced. Men were threatened.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And also see how in the old days, the rhythm, when the drum was in the hands of the women, it was used as a tool of connection and as a tool of spiritual transformation and in rites of passages, birth, marriage, death. It was to facilitate connection to yourself, to others, and to the divine. Okay. In the hands of men, it became an instrument of war.
Yes.
It became the drums of war. The drums of war, or the drums of forced labor, you know, to keep the slaves working in a specific rhythm.
That's why I hate the military parades, because it starts when I hear that drum. I get nauseous. Yeah. I want to be sick.
Exactly. With the frame drum in the hands of women, it's such an elevating, uplifting sound.
It's a centering sound.
Yes,
you find it's, your
you it you grounds ground you. It grounds, grounds you, you yes. But it also uplifts you.
Because you, in grounding yourself, you actually find strength, because your rhythm, everything is going according to the rhythm that it should be going.
And also you find the rhythm of your breath.
Yeah.
Because if you don't find the rhythm of your breath while you're drumming, you get extremely tired, okay? But the drum itself is such a soothing sound because it's so
rhythmic.
And also because it's reminiscent of the sound that we hear in the womb.
Mm.
So it's a very soothing sound, and that means that our heartbeat is regulated, our breathing is regulated.
And your anxiety is out of the window. It's away.
And also, any instrument will do that, but drumming in particular, it connects the two hemispheres of your brain because you're doing two different things at the same time. The way that the women drummers played the drum, they weren't playing it sitting down. First of all, it was a collective thing. It was not a, it wasn't a, just one person.
Singular.
Okay? It wasn't singular. So it was a collective thing. So you had to synchronize with everybody else. Okay. And to do that, they were stepping or walking or processing. Okay. Which means that you keep the beat with your feet. Mm. You become the metronome, basically.
Okay. Okay. So you're doing both walking and hitting the...
And stepping and then sometimes chanting at the same time. So all of these things create new neural paths in the brain and they connect the left and right hemisphere of the brain.
And by the fact that you're doing it with people means the collaboration is important.
Yes.
We forget the fact that it's not only me that exists in this world, it's us.
Yes. And that is so profound because for me, what was so important in that circle of women frame drummers that was created through Lane's workshops became a sisterhood. We had to be able to play and synchronize. You have to solve, you have to see each other as equals. Yes. You're all equals in the circle. And created a drumming group that was based on consensus. Decisions were taken in consensus.
Collectively.
It wasn't even democracy. It wasn't, so many of us. So, if there's 50 of us.
If there's 51.
50%, yeah. No, it had to be a consensus. So when somebody was disagreeing or had a different opinion, we would sit and listen, okay? And, understand what their concern was, try to reassure so that we would all come to the same conclusion, same mind.
Mm. Which is what men don't do.
Which is what men don't do.
Men do not think collectively or collaboratively. It's to them, it's if I lose something. If I compromise, I lose something. I've got to win every time. So they're not listening to their... But let's move on because the reason I love this is because as a peace builder and being part of the peace building community, a lot of the time people think that a peace builder just sits at the negotiating table. And they couldn't be more wrong because just the fact that you and I are speaking to me is a peace building activity.
100%.
Everything we do... Every single day, no matter how big or how small or how irrelevant, apparently relative, everything is peace building. And this is a very big part of what you're saying because we need to get back to the collaborative, working together.
And which brings me to what, I think I'm going to give you a pass to the next thing that you want to talk about. Peace begins within.
Absolutely.
If you are not in peace within yourself, how can you make peace with anybody else? Okay. And this is where collaboration, you have to find the way of accepting yourself and accepting others and realizing how much better you can be. Okay. And how much more things you can achieve with others rather than against them.
No, I totally agree because the whole point, the whole reason a group works better is I can be a good talker. You're a good cook. Yes. Someone else is a good speaker. Does documents. And if you put that all together, the work we can do is magnificent.
Exactly.
Whereas if I'm doing it alone, I'm already at a handicap.
Because I can only do so much.
Yes.
That you can do on your own. Okay. And it's not about, we have, in our society that's, in this male dominated, I hate the word patriarchy, but it's easy to explain what I mean. We are taught to be in competition with each other.
We are not taught to be the best we can be. We are taught to be better than someone else.
And that also usually means that if we try to put others down so that we can shine.
Yes. This need, I've got to...
Yeah. It's almost like...
They're an idiot, which makes me better, whatever that means.
Or, not that both of us can't be... Better.
Equally wonderful.
I've got to be better than you.
And this is a good passer, as you said, to the other thing that I learned from you and has made my day better. Self-care. Yeah. Self-care is looking after your body. And you're also a cacao master, or put the label.
Okay.
A cacao, the natural cacao, not right. the processed one that you find in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. The natural cacao. And tell me why it's good. I know why it's good, but explain to me, explain why, okay. how you came to this stage in your life, which isn't a stage, it's a way of life, because you stepped into something that actually connects everything else that you did in the past and is taking you towards wherever you're going.
Yeah.
So tell me about cacao.
So you're absolutely right. Cacao, for me, is the ultimate sort of self-care tool. So cacao came into my life 2018, I think. So not that long ago, I guess. Again, it was just a coincidence, serendipity, whatever you call it. I found out about it in Limassol, a girl that would bring cacao from Guatemala. Well, to cut a long story short, most people know of cacao as cocoa powder, right?
Yes.
Or chocolate. Okay.
The hot chocolate that
We call it cacao instead of cocoa because it is the original
bean.
Okay. So cacao is the name, Theobroma cacao is the name of the tree. That produces the seeds, the pods and the seeds of the cacao. Theobroma cacao, Theobroma means is a word that comes from the Greek words theos and vromi. So it's the food of the gods.
Okay.
Okay. So cacao in its pure form is a superfood.
Okay.
The cacao that you and I have been drinking is from trees that are indigenous to Mesoamerica, the middle, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Mexico, the Peru, that's the area that cacao is actually indigenous to. It is harvested and fermented locally, and then
naturally,
it is slightly roasted in the villages around the Lake Atitlan in Guatemala, and hand peeled, and then pressed in a mill, a mechanical but not electrical mill, and dried and shipped to us, and that's it. Everything else, the cacao that becomes cocoa powder and then chocolate goes through so much processing.
Chemical blasting.
So much processing that it actually, the end product is a dead product, okay?
But
devoid
so that
of all its nutrients.
But so that the listeners understand, why is cacao a superfood?
Okay, it's cacao a superfood because it contains... it has the highest
levels concentration
content of magnesium. Okay,
what is magnesium?
Magnesium is extremely good for, it's a muscle relaxant. It is extremely good for us women, especially for our
osteoporosis to prepare.
Osteoporosis, but also for all of the menstrual cycle. It's a wonderful, wonderful, amazing product, and most people are deficient of magnesium.
Yeah, yes, okay. They are, and they don't know it.
Okay. It has more antioxidants than blueberries, which are supposed to be a powerhouse of antioxidants.
And antioxidants are?
Antioxidants are what protects us from
inflammation.
Free radicals and inflammations. Okay. And it's like vitamin C, flavanols, vitamin A, vitamin D. Cacao has all of them. It has a high content of iron as well and zinc. So it is a superfood on a level that it's actually in one of the top five superfoods on this planet.
And it also has good cholesterol, doesn't it?
It has good cholesterol because it is very rich in butter. The cacao bean has a content of about 40 to 60% butter, which is actually subtracted from the cocoa powder that we get at the supermarket.
Yes, okay. Okay,
even if it's organic or fair trade, and that, and then that depletes it of all its nutrients. Okay, if you extract the butter from it, then it's you know, there's no way that it can actually
be of benefit.
Be of benefit.
It also has a bit of what do you call it? Caffeine, but a very low, okay, much lower level than coffee.
This cacao that we are drinking has less caffeine than a decaf coffee.
Okay.
Okay. There's other cacaos in the market that have more caffeine, and we should be wary of that. You need the less caffeine and the highest theobromine contents. Theobromine is a cousin of molecule to caffeine. But caffeine is a stimulant of the nervous system, and that is why coffee gives us
the high,
but also a little bit of a jittery feeling and a little bit of a buzz. Whereas theobromine is a stimulant of the cardiovascular system, which means it gives you more energy, which is more sustainable without the jitter and without the side effects and without the adrenaline.
Yeah. But okay, that's why one of the reasons I started drinking cacao is because I'd have tea or coffee in the morning. I have a natural tremor.
Yes.
It's a genetic one. And if I had things like frappe, which is raw and Nescafe, it would kill me.
Yeah.
I would be like, I could make the frappe without using a machine. I would get such a bad tremor.
It's
a jitters. And it's also it would also give me a tachycardia.
Yeah.
So to me, I've limited, because I still have a slight tremor, but I'm not going to get rid of it because it's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
I also get occasionally tachycardia, but it's less because I've put in cacao in my morning.
Yes.
I do my own recipe. I put a tablespoon of cacao,
mm-hmm,
and a tablespoon of collagen, because mm-hmm, I'm also of that age. No, we have to, I mean, whatever. I need to.
So am I, dear. Getting there.
So I do, that's my little shot in the morning. I whisk it, and that's my little shot in the morning.
Yeah.
And if I don't have that shot, I really feel terrible.
Isn't that?
Yeah. Really?
I mean, I know. It's like with me. I stopped drinking coffee, and I didn't actually realize it. I started. It's just that I love the taste of cacao, okay? And I love how it makes me feel, because I've got all this energy, but without feeling the jitters.
And the adrenaline.
It's lasting. It's for 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. I have my cacao in the morning and I'll go, you know, I've got so much energy. My mood is better because it also has some psychoactive agents in it, cacao. Anandamide, which is the bliss molecule, mm-hmm, from ananda, the Sanskrit word that means bliss, which has it elevates your mood. It has PEA, phenylethylamine, which is a molecule that is deficient from people who have ADHD. So cacao helps you concentrate and focus because it's a cardiovascular,
it helps the cardiovascular system.
Once you drink cacao, there's more oxygen
in your blood,
traveling all over your body, brain included. Okay, so you don't have brain fog. You have, you know, you've got mental clarity, you've got sustainable energy, you've got an uplifted mood. What more can you need want?
and for the more lay people, the other thing it does is, most of us have some sugar in our tea or our coffee. I was able, even though it's slightly bitter, for some reason,
yes,
I don't need, in the beginning I used to put teaspoon of brown sugar, and I thought, you know, it's actually not making a difference. And now I'm not having that sugar in the morning. Yes.
Yes.
It's a quiet flavor, but now I'm not even having that sugar. So it's reduced
sugar. Sugar cravings.
I think it's also good for diabetics.
Exactly. Because of that, diabetes 2, I think, which is the acquired diabetes, which has to do with the sugar levels, right?
It's the one I'm borderline, because I was a terrible human being. I used to have 2 Coca-Colas a day, and I nearly turned myself into a diabetic.
Yeah.
And the minute I stopped the Coca-Cola, I went back to almost normal, but still had the sugar craving.
Mm. Yeah.
So this has taken part of the sugar out of my diet, which is very important.
And I can give you a few recipes to do bliss balls with cacao and dates so that you eliminate sugar completely from your life. And then, you know, if you have any sort of sugar craving, you just have those and that's perfect.
Because, well, then I think maybe you should send me the links and then we can put them together with this podcast when we upload this podcast.
And I think the other thing that cacao does, I mean, because we're talking about it as a superfood, but people don't know that cacao was actually revered as a god, goddess, the divinity in Mesoamerica, in the Aztec, the Toltec, the Olmec, the Mayan civilizations. And that was because it was understood and they realized that in higher dosages, cacao can actually help us on other levels as well. Emotional, psychological, mental levels. This is why we have cacao ceremonies where we can and work through things.
And that's why we'll take it to the next step for you, that you actually lead classes or gatherings.
And again, it's a facilitator of connection. We're going back to connection. But drumming is a facilitator for connection. Cacao helps you slow down.
Very important, so that you can breathe.
Yeah, and once you slow down, you can actually also become aware of your body, of your thoughts, of your emotions. And because you're in a more elevated and in a more loving space, because it's not a coincidence that it's called the opening heart, heart-opening medicine, okay? This is because it's a cardiovascular stimulant, and it's a vasodilator, so physically, literally, it opens the heart.
Yes, both literally and metaphorically.
And metaphorically, you become a more loving person. I will tell you one thing. Once cacao came into my life, I stopped having road rage.
Well, I still need to work on that one. But I've got another rage that I...
But there's other rage. Because coffee, it has an aggressive energy behind it. Everything has an energy behind it. Everything that exists in this world has a sort of, you know, an essence to it.
What it's done for me is I now choose my fights.
Yes.
I will step if I think, you know what, don't need to go this way. I will step back, right. Whereas before it was, no, I need to say it and I need to make you understand.
Right, exactly.
So that the road rage I'm still working on, but I can't.
Because you kind of, it allows you to take a step back and kind of.
And to think of yourself.
Yeah.
This is not
the most important thing about self-care that people don't understand, and they feel that, you know, oh, this is, you know, isn't this narcissistic to sort of take care of myself and self-love and all of that? But
nonsense.
But self-care only means that I become aware and observant of myself to know that if I am not good with myself, I cannot be good with or for anybody else.
But take it even a step further in any illness that you know, whether it's heart attacks, cancer, strokes or whatever, the one variable is anxiety.
Yeah.
And so if you can eliminate that, you're actually, doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it certainly means you're eliminating one of the factors that can cause illness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And serious illnesses. Because I've had two serious health scares. The one was a brain tumor, but I don't think that, they still don't know why. The brain tumor I had, benign. 3 in 4 incidents are women.
Yeah.
They don't know why. They actually can't work out why. But and then I had a heart attack 2 years later. But the one thing that's consistent is the doctor said to me, weight and anxiety.
Yeah.
I said weight is easier to control than anxiety, which we all feel that we can't control our anxiety. And this is one way of taking a step forward in controlling it.
Yeah. I think that... that is actually, you know, autoimmune system, autoimmune diseases are also predominantly a women's sort of thing. Most women, you know, autoimmune it attacks women. And it's the same thing. It's because we're actually attacking ourselves. men grow up a lot more selfish than women do, okay? We are taught to care for others. And in that care for others, it's almost like we are not in that equation.
Yes. Everyone's got to be better than us or better off. But when I was, when the doctor explained this to me, that the 3 out of the 4 incidents are women, my first reaction was, well, maybe it's hormonal, okay? Mm-mm. But the second one is that women,
it's societal.
We actually have learned to work on so many levels of caring for everyone else.
Yeah.
That it's the pressure we put on ourselves.
It's the pressure we put on ourselves, and we leave ourselves last.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I'm going to take care of my child. I'm going to take care of my husband. I'm going to take care of my mother. I'm going to take care of my friends. I'm going to take care of the business. I'm going to take care of the house. And if there's any time left and I'm still not, you know,
I'm still standing up.
I'll make a tea for myself, you know, and that's self-care. Whereas if you don't start, this is why I like starting my day with my cacao, sitting down, doing a little bit of meditation, doing a little bit of drumming, so that I can center myself, so that I can come from that space of calmness.
Yes, make decisions carefully and calmly.
Yes. I am no good to anybody if I am all over the place.
Well, I noticed that the other night I went to Limassol, and Limassol's a nightmare because I don't know Limassol. And I was going to a seminar, and the GPS kept on taking me round and round and round.
Yeah.
And at some stage, I actually went into panic, total panic attack. I stopped on the side of the road, went into a shop, asked to use the toilet, and then told them, where can I go? And I thought, you know what? Too much stress for me. I took a deep breath. I sent a message and said to them, you know what? Too stressful, too much traffic. I can't make it. Apologies. And I didn't feel guilty, which is very...
That is another thing. Okay.
I didn't feel guilty. And I'd paid for the workshop, which was 20 euros. And I thought, doesn't matter. Feel good. I stopped at a friend that I have in Limassol. We sat there and we just spoke for an hour, and then I got back on the highway and I drove back home. But that said, of suddenly saying, you know what? What am I doing to myself?
Yeah.
Why am I putting myself under stress? Yeah. And I stopped, thought, do I actually want to go the way? Because the young lady at the stall helped me, told me where I should be going. I tried it for 2 minutes. I thought, you know, this is not working.
Mm.
Pulled over, sent a message, went to my friend, and I was better enough. No guilt. Yeah. So I think this thing about actually stopping. And if I'd gone an hour later, stressed up, what would I have learned in that workshop?
No.
Yeah. No benefit to anyone.
And this is why I think what cacao has taught me is to actually, it has made me aware of my feelings, okay? And the sensations in my body. So, because the first thing is to actually understand that, oh, I am stressed now. Because even that we don't understand.
Yes.
It takes, you know, we spend the whole day stressed and actually holding our breaths. Because when you're stressed,
you stop breathing,
right? And the whole day goes by and then you realize, oh my God.
When did I breathe last?
Or I'm tensing my body, you know, my shoulders are tensed. I'm sitting like this. I'm really tensed. And you don't even realize. Whereas with cacao, it almost as if it connects me to myself, right? First of all. So the moment I feel my stomach cramping or my shoulders, you know, doing this or my teeth, I'm grinding my teeth or holding my breath, I recognize that almost immediately. Okay.
And it doesn't mean you're less effective. What it means is you're ultimately more effective because you're stepping back.
What it means is that I go, oh, okay.
Where am I? What do I need?
Where am I? What I need? And what I need is I found that if what I need is actually beneficial for other people as well. You know, if I take care of myself, it's not just for me.
I'm a better mom.
I'm a better mom.
I'm
exactly.
a better mom. I'm a better colleague.
I'm a better colleague.
I'm a better friend.
I'm a better human being.
Yes.
Right? Because I don't, you know, because...
I'm healthier.
And I'm healthier.
I'm healthier.
So I'm better for the government and for everybody. Yeah.
We're coming to the end of this conversation. Tell me what else you'd like to say about any of the work you've done, because you've had quite an interesting journey of self-exploration and self finding yourself, mindfulness. Who now? You tell me who Iyanthi was 20 years ago and compare it to Iyanthi today.
I'm going to go back a little bit more than 20 years ago. I was a very angry person, a very bitter person. I had a difficult life. I was
you
young.
You had a lot of challenges.
So I felt like a victim of life. I felt like I was, that life owed me something. I was very angry, very bitter, low confidence, low self-esteem. So kind of not unlike a lot of women.
I agree. You gave him the profile of most of us a few years ago.
Yeah. And what I say that, you know, if I can do it, everybody can, you know, because and it takes a little bit of somebody coming along and saying something to you.
It takes
a little bit of a click. Sometimes it's just somebody, another woman
reaching her hand out to you,
reaching her hand out, doing something for you without wanting something back. Okay.
Or sometimes
you find yourself in I don't know.
Or sometimes it's as simple as you seeing an advert that actually you've reached low stage in your life and you saw that advert for the transformation.
Yeah.
And you suddenly thought, don't know what it is, but I need to be there.
Yeah.
So it's nothing that you can predefine, but if there's a click.
But if there's something that I would recommend to people, I mean, apart from, you know, I'm not going to talk about cacao or drumming, but something that's reach out to women friends and reach out to older women than you, okay, who have done things, who have gone through things, who can take you under their wing, who can... I'll be there for you. Female companionship, female friends, so that we can so we can heal this sister wound and mother wound that we all have of, you know, the competition between women. If you can find women in your life that you don't feel that you need to compete with and that you want to help and receive help.
I remember the best advice I got when I was coming towards the end of my marriage was actually from my godmother, who had been through a divorce. And she turned to me and she said to me, you know what, Magda, you've got, if you want to leave, she says to me, you've got to make sure you leave before your energy is depleted. Because afterwards is a challenge because you need to rebuild.
Yeah.
So don't leave when there's no energy left. Make sure you want to leave, but make sure it's when you still have energy. And I think that's one of the things that made a click for me, as well as my lawyer telling me that, because I wanted to move to Greece, to Cyprus. I was in Greece, and I was worried about my son. And he said to me, worry about Magda now. Wherever Magda's happy, her son will be happy. So your son does not belong in this equation. Make sure you are where you will be okay. So to me, that there are two or three things that came to me unexpectedly, but they're actually totally.
Well, for me, I read two lines, two different lines somewhere. Okay, one was the best thing that you can do for your child is to be happy. Okay, and that clicked for me big time.
Yes,
big time. Okay, it was like really a turning point for me. And then the other thing that I learned, which was a big lesson for me personally, was I would rather be happy than right.
No. But going back to the first one, as society has taught us that we as mothers need to be looking after our kids, they take me out of the equation. And it's what we said earlier. If I'm not okay, yeah. I'm of no use to people around me. So to me, this thing about I'm okay and everything else around me falls into place. So I think we got two similar turning points. Two similar turning points to, firstly, when you, it's what we said earlier that I've chosen to choose my battles.
Yeah.
Which means I'm checking on my energy. If my energy is, if it's going to deplete my energy, I'm out of here. And not necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good place to start. And it's also a good way to start changing or reassessing what 24 was and what 25 is going to be. And who is Yanthi today? Yeah. Besides an awesome human being and a well-balanced one.
Yanthi is a very lucky, very grateful, very positive, forward-looking human being.
I'm glad to hear that. And you will be giving us two or three of your recipes for jumpstarts if we don't have sugar. And I'll put up your website if people want to contact you, because you do groups of these cocoa ceremonies, which just, by the way, are bloody awesome. It's a good, and that's a good place to to listen to people, to relax, to tell your story. Yes. And they generally, even though we talk
safe and loving environment, space,
and even though we've been talking about women here, it's always nice to have a few men included in this conversation.
Absolutely. This isn't about excluding men.
Yes.
Even the frame drumming that I took before, you know, all of these things is, for me, it's about raising women up to a certain level so that they can embrace men, so that we can bring men into this other way. It's not about excluding them.
And it's not about doing it alone. It's about doing it collaboratively. Men, women, it's a community thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think this is, we both are, to me, if I look at Magda 20 years ago, as I was coming out of my marriage, I was destroyed, damaged, low self-esteem, angry at everything. Because I did, when I left my marriage, it was within a period of 2 years, I lost both my parents. I was living in Greece. I left the marital home and I changed country.
Yeah.
So I saw damaged human being, damaged. And I look at me now and thought, fuck, I'm awesome.
Exactly. And so that people know, because we have, I sort of haven't talked about my background just, you know, in any sort of detail, which, and I won't, but just some highlights. Because I lost my parents. I lost my mother when I was 16 to cancer. And I lost my father when I was 23. He died of a heart attack. So I was alone.
And you're an only child.
I've got a sister who left when I was 16. As soon as my mother died, she went to England and then the States, and she never got back. So I was very alone. I was victimized because I was taken advantage of by a lot of people. You know, I did feel alone. I did not feel support. I had a lot of legitimate reasons
to feel like a victim,
and to feel angry and to feel bitter. And this is why I said before that if you and I can do it,
exactly,
everybody can.
And you can also do it by reaching out to other people, because you're not alone.
No,
if you actually step out of your, it's only me and I'm a victim and what can I do? If you actually step out of that and speak to a few people around you, you'll realize you're not alone.
Sometimes we hold on to our victimhood, to the victim identity, because it's all we know.
Yes.
At least that victim and that the anger is usually a fuel.
Yes.
Right? For us to move forward, to do things. But it's also depleting.
And it's
also what makes us sick. So what we have come to, both you and I have come to realize is that, you know, you don't have to fuel yourself through anger. You can fuel yourself with a nice cup of cacao, a good walk in nature, your friends, and self-care. But we need to learn that, because our default, you know, and society's default is that, you know, I'm going to get angry. If something is wrong, I'm going to get angry and then I'm going to do it and change it and whatever. And this is how, you know, revolutions happen.
Yes.
Right. But we have evolved as human beings to be able to shift that into learning and growing without
anger and
negativity. Yeah.
Because you, if you choose your battles, you can actually choose where you can use your strength.
Yeah.
And not use it and deplete it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm wishing both of us and the listeners a really good 2025.
Oh.
And yeah. More continuous cocoa gatherings, because they, to me, they're the food of my soul.
Yeah.
I have them and I just chill out. Okay. So, Yanthi,
thank
you very much for being with
so
me.
Thank you so much, Magda. Thank you so, so much. And a good, happy 2025 to everyone.
And to the listeners, happy 2025. And remember, self-care is paramount. Absolutely paramount, non-negotiable. Thank you, Yanthi.
Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.